The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, everybody, 9 o'clock hour. Glad you are here on this Tuesday, the 23rd day of April. Glad you're here. You know, we're inside 200 days, you know. Where is this? What's today? 195 days to the election. So everything that's going on, every big news story, every global news story, every national news story, it has its own significance. You know, the seething Jew hatred pouring across our college campuses, that's a huge deal. But obviously, as a sidecar right attached to it, it's like, okay, how does that affect the election? Does it put the Biden administration in a kind of a tough spot? And that's a yes. And they deserve it because they've in attempt so often. Have you ever heard anybody say when trying to please everybody, you please nobody? And that's really often true. Trying to play both sides against the middle, trying to have it both ways, trying to straddle the fence, whatever metaphor you like. Because this administration in starting out when everybody was in shock after October 7th, the vicious brutality of the Hamas attacks, that was a time of, I mean, nothing's ever unanimous in America, but that was a time of just broad, universal support for pretty well anything Israel wanted to do to retaliate for those brutal attacks. And that lasted for about 20 minutes. Because then the pro-Hamas wing of the Democrat Party decided, what? We, as an American government, we support Israel in their genocide against the Palestinian people, which is a complete lie. This is the index cards, the lexicon of anti-Semitism. And in the months that have passed since, that anti-Semitism has reared its head in the halls of Congress, in college classrooms from so-called professors, and across college campuses from so-called students. And Joe Biden, who apparently ran for president, for one of the main reasons he ran for president, we are told, is he was so repelled, so offended, so triggered by those idiot supremacist chowder heads with the tiki torches at Charlottesville. And, of course, that was disgusting. And it was like, you know, a crazy loud handful of people. As I've said earlier, on the conservative side, if you even want to call them that, I don't feel like I share a lot of if somebody is marching through Charlottesville, Virginia, you know, with a blazing torch saying the Jews will not replace us, I don't really care if that person agrees with me on border policy. You know, if they agree with me on that taxes are too high, you know, or agrees with me on how many genders there are, you're just a repulsive human being. And I just really don't want to have a human Venn diagram overlap with you at all. But if, in a manner of speaking, I guess if that's sort of the conservative side of the portion of anti-Semitism that comes from somebody that might vote Republican, all right, that exists. And it is a tiny caricature, a freak show, a ridiculous fringe of what you might call our side. Over on the Democrat side, the seething Jew hatred is spread across college campuses. It's found in the halls of Congress. We have members of Congress that will not condemn chants of death to America in their districts, Rashida Tlaib. We have people across college campuses, thousands upon thousands of students, not just one dumb fraction of one particular protest in one, you know, medium-sized American city, but in our biggest cities, on our biggest campuses, thousands upon thousands of people with a rage so toxic that it has people telling Jewish students, you might want to stay home. You might not be safe on your college campus from these raging Jew-hating anti-Semites who, by the way, are Democrat voters. So where's Joe Biden's angst about this? Where's Joe Biden's motivation to speak out against that? He was badgered by a reporter about it. What do you think about the anti-Semitism on college campuses? Well, of course I condemn that, and we're doing something. Yeah, what exactly are you doing, Joe? How about calling it out every day? How about doing what I just did to the chowder heads on our side, saying that's exactly what you guys are. You are cartoon character extremist dolts. Joe Biden won't do that to the Jew-hating portion of his voter base, number one, because there are too many of them. Well, I guess that's really number one and number two, because of their number and because of the consequences that could lie ahead if he alienates the Hamas wing of the Democrat Party. He can't do it. Can't do it. And yet, just the other day, there was the Biden White House, or whoever's running it, pushing for aid to Israel and Ukraine, mostly Ukraine. That's what they really cared about. And so that now has the Hamas wing of the party. They're all twisted off again. Wait a minute, you're still supporting Israel? Well, of course we are. It's America. We will always support Israel. And if the squad or the Jew-hating students or the Jew-hating professors don't like that, it's going to be a tough life for you. Because even under presidents like Joe Biden, Israel will get some grudging, reluctant, mealy-mouthed support. And that's exactly what that support has meant, which is why they painted themselves into this corner even more hazardously, because the Democrats, most of them older, especially Jewish Democrats who think, wow, maybe Israel should be supported, all they've seen is Antony Blinken, our Secretary of State, you know, rolling all out with his inept shuttle diplomacy to go lecture Netanyahu about, hey, don't win the war too much. Don't win the war too much. Can't have that. So the smarter thing, not that I'm in the habit of advising Democrat administration, but just purely for logic and sanity, figure out what you are and just go with that. Figure out what you are and go with that. And again, free advice for the Biden White House. There are more people in America, and even more people who are Democrat voters who think that support for Israel is good than there are pro-Hamas lunatics. So support Israel unabashedly and without conflict and without scolding them or restraining them as they try to win a war that Hamas started. Just do that. And when the portion of your voter base that thinks Israel is guilty of genocide and chants the river to the sea and worse, you got to say, guys, if you want to vote for me, vote for me. But America is going to support Israel on my watch, and let the chips fall where they may. Free advice. For look at me, offering free advice to the Biden administration. Newt Gingrich has some, it's advice, but it's wise counsel. He was on Hannity last night. And the question properly hangs from the rafters, you know, not just what might Biden say about this, but what might, and a lot of these universities are in New York. When you're in Columbia, you're in New York. When you're at Yale, you're in Connecticut. Obviously, when you're at Berkeley, you're in California. Good luck with that. But these Democrat governors, what might they have to say, have to do about stopping the seething, dangerous, toxic anti-Semitism spreading across their college campuses? And Newt Gingrich had a memory about what happened in California at a particularly protest-laden time in the 60s. and a governor in California named Ronald Reagan.
I remember Ronald Reagan as governor dealing with the demonstrators at Berkeley, and he was very clear about it. He was going to clear it out. He was going to stop it. He was going to use the National Guard. He was going to do whatever it took. A couple of simple steps. Every university should expel every student engaged in anti-Semitic activity. Anybody who's engaged in anti-Semitic activity who is not an American citizen should be deported immediately. Now, those two steps alone would bring a great deal of quiet in the next 30 to 60 hours. But you have to have people with guts, willing to stand up for America and willing to stand up for the rule of law.
So good luck with that. Because will Joe Biden do that or call for that? No. Will Kathy Hochul do that as governor of New York? No. Will Gavin Newsom do such things? Shoot, no. So easy to say. In fact, not so difficult to do, but impossible to imagine under Democrat leadership.
And right now you don't have that. Most of these senior universities are headed up by people who are totally cowards, who are intimidated by the thugs and the brutal people and the pro-terrorists. And in fact, they need to stand up to him. That was Reagan's great fight as governor, and it helped make him president of the United States. I think in terms of the court, something that Speaker Mike Johnson said really struck home with me when he said about the decision on whether or not to help Israel and Ukraine, that this is not a game. Let me tell you, I am deeply worried that tomorrow a totally corrupt judge and a totally corrupt district attorney are going to try to put a former president of the United States, candidate of his party, and front runner in the polls in jail. Now, I think this is so horrendous that there has to be some way to reach out to the Supreme Court. I mean, this is literally like some of the civil rights workers in Mississippi in the 1960s. The New York system is now so deeply corrupted, and it is so bitterly, deeply anti-Trump. The absurdity of the judge's daughter, who made millions and millions of dollars doing anti-Trump politics, and the judge would like us to believe, much like Joe Biden, he had no idea what his children were doing. I mean, the whole thing, frankly, resembles On the Waterfront, Stanley Kubrick's brilliant film. This is about corruption. It has nothing to do with honesty. And what worries me is it's a genuine threat to Donald Trump.
But even on principle, not about him. I mean, his personal safety is about him. But from people who talk all the time about existential threats to democracy, the things that are being done to Trump are the existential threats to democracy. Let me pause because also last night on the TV box, whether it's Tim Scott or Sarah Huckabee Sanders or in this particular case, J.D. Vance, every time I see these folks, I go, how do I feel in the Trump running mate vice presidential derby? Jesse Waters asked J.D. Vance about stopping some of this campus nonsense. We'll listen to it next, 9:22. 9:27. Alrighty, so last night, I'm doing the TV laps. It's kind of like every issue has some presidential race significance. Every cable news segment all of a sudden takes on new significance when it's somebody who's in the vice presidential derby. J.D. Vance was on with Jesse Waters last night asking about when might Biden shut down this campus anti-Semitism.
Well, it should have happened yesterday, of course, Jesse. I mean, look, this is the convergence of two factors that the left has been openly cultivating for years now. On the one hand, you have well-educated, limousine, self-hating liberals who get very good educations, but really they're getting very good indoctrinations. They're not getting an education in anything. And then on the flip side, you have the importation of millions of people, some of whom aren't properly vetted and some of whom hate this country. And those two forces are joining in Columbia and in Yale and producing this incredible campus violence. You know, obviously we condemn anti-Semitism, Jesse, but I don't care what your underlying ideology is. If you're harassing fellow students, if you're preventing people from getting to class, if you're stabbing your fellow students in the eye with flags, you should go to prison.
J.D. Vance, 866-660-5759. Hey, how you doing, sir? Welcome. Happy Tuesday.
Hey there, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, you Man, you got that soft peddling down to a science on this who hates Jews and who hates this
really?
And who hates that.
In what way?
Really? Really? Because, you know, that, I mean, back in, what, Charlottesville, that was the Jews were not, you know, replaced.
Right, right. And that was a that was a tiny fringe of caricatured, cartoonish.
It's too many.
Oh, no, absolutely right. Side. But my point is, if you want to call them on my side, our anti-Semites are fringe, cartoon character jokes. The Democrat Party side of anti-Semitism is spread across college campuses, in the classrooms, in the halls of Congress. So I would suggest that's a pretty vast difference.
So let me tell you. Now, let me hit you with this.
Sure.
How about your leader who uses the word calls other people vermin?
What?
I still remember back in the 40s.
What does that have to do with anything?
Guy that called people vermin.
That's Trump being particularly aggressive to illegal immigrants.
Hold on. He really hated Jews. The dude back in the 40s that called people Jews.
I'm sorry. Mark? What? Do you think Trump has a problem with Jewish people?
No, excuse me.
Do you think that Trump? No. Do you think Trump has a problem with Jewish people?
I think Trump has a problem with people that he don't like.
Oh, do you think Trump has a problem with Jewish people?
Yes.
Why? Give me one piece of evidence. By the way, Trump, unlike Biden, has said that these protests, these anti-Israeli protests, are terrible. So please tell me what evidence that Trump has a problem with Jewish people.
Well, hold on. Jews will not replace us. Are those the people that Trump said that are good people on that side?
No, that's a complete lie, and you should know better. Yeah, that's a complete lie, and you should know better.
It's another lie.
I ain't got time for this kind of BS. Invent a new kind of BS and bring it to me another time. The good people on both sides thing was about the folks who showed up, about the Robert E. Lee statue. You know it. If you don't know it, you know it now. 9:31. I have regaled you with the story often.
I don't blame you, for I know you won't.
It's 1981. I've been working in radio in Charleston, West Virginia for a couple of years, doing newscasts on a country station. Country, as the 70s turned into the 80s, was an interesting world. I mean, I had a brain full of, you know, Merle and Willie and Waylon and all that. They're also the crossover artists, and boy, that started a conversation. Your Ronnie Millsaps and your Ann Murray's and your Kenny Rogers's and Crystal Gayle's. I loved them all. Loved them all. But then, prepare for the foreign language kids, a record arrived in the mail. I put the needle down on the record. Just look it up. You'll see what I'm talking about. The album was Waiting for the Sun to Shine, and it was this guy. First cut on the first side. If that's the way you feel. And that was Ricky Skaggs. And so in the decades since, I've just loved the guy. And one of the cool things about this gig is every once in a while, folks blow through town, we get to say, hey, Ricky Skaggs is on the phone. Welcome back, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing great. That sure brought back some memories. And I knew exactly for what album it was and what cut it was. It's the opening of Waiting for the Sun to Shine. And, man, that just brings back a lot of memory. Kind of tears you up a little bit.
Well, it does me too. And because I had just sort of the usual osmosis. My mom and dad, I was born in 1957, and mom and dad were not big country devotees, but they were fans of sort of the instrumentalists, the Chet Atkinses, the Floyd Kramers. Yeah. I mean, and so we didn't have like a whole lot of Willie and Waylon and Merle Haggard in the house. But when I started to work for a country station, holy cow, we had all of that. And I remember the programmers, and this was a thing. And maybe, first of all, the reason for this is not just because Ricky's awesome and we love him. May 2nd, Arlington Music Hall, arlingtonmusichall.net for tickets there. That's a Wednesday. Following day, Greenville Municipal Auditorium, and I think their website is Showtime at the GMA, Greenville Municipal Auditorium, Showtime at the GMA.com. May 2nd in Arlington, May 3rd in Greenville. Go see Ricky Skaggs in Kentucky Thunder. Okay, so there we go. More plugs to come. But at that time, our station was trying to satisfy everybody, which is a good thing for a music station to do, and they started playing your stuff, And they were playing a lot of Ronnie Millsap, Crystal Gayle, Ann Murray, the so-called crossover artists, and a whole lot of Waylon and Merle. There's a quote I remember from Chet Atkins who said, and this is a nice thing to have somebody say about you, Chet said, "You saved country music." From what?
Well, I guess from just going off into Never Never Land, you know, kind of. Somebody needs to save it today, I think. You know, it's so I don't know. And I love all these young artists, and I love what they're doing. I mean, everybody's wanting to, you know, be themselves and all. I certainly understood that coming in. But, you know, country has always had, you know, the foundations of country has always been, you know, very pure and you know, very respectful of the past, you know, and kind of paying honor to fathers and mothers of the country, the music field, those that really paid a price to, you know, especially in bluegrass music. Good gracious, you know, when, I mean, Bill Monroe survived Elvis Presley, he survived the Beatles, you know, and rock and roll, and he survived Nashville, which was pretty amazing in its own self, you know. But, you know, that's, I always tell people that Chet was not on his meds that day. He said that. Anyway, but I appreciate what he meant, you know, and we were great friends, and I loved him a lot.
Because I think everybody was just trying to, you know, sell records, make money, achieve some fame, write songs, get out there and have impact. Yeah. And even in my, you know, young, wet behind the ears age, it always struck me as kind of silly. I think listeners made a bigger deal out of it than artists did. I think it was possible to listen to you doing Don't Get Above Your Raisin, well, you know, listen to Okie from Muskogee and listen to Crystal Gayle doing a duet with Eddie Rabbit and love all of it and love absolutely all of it. And for a country station to say, look, we're going to put it all out there and let folks do what they want, was too much made at the time of sort of the compartmentalization of country music.
I think so. I think, you know, everybody kind of wants categories and wants, you know, boxes to put people in, you know, but, you know, I love the fact that people, you know, I think, you know, God is a creator. Okay. And he created us to be, you know, to not be copies, but to be originals, you know, and there's something about, you know, your voice. I mean, there's nobody has a voice like Willie. There's nobody had a voice like George Jones. George didn't try to be somebody else. Willie has certainly not tried to be anybody else. You know, he had a time here in Nashville that, you know, they tried to make him into more of a, you know, country kind of artist, you know, and to fit their mold into a Nashville sound, a slick Nashville sound in the 60s, early 70s, you know, but, you know, he kind of kicked and bucked over that and then became Willie Nelson that we know today. So he's done well.
He has indeed. Willie has done well. Pot is a preservative. I mean, I guess there's just no two ways around that. And what also gets preserved, as we were talking about, waiting for the sun to shine. And then it's like, okay, how's that sophomore thing going to go? So since I was already pretty well hooked, I guess it's 82. And then there came Highways and Heartaches. Let's take a moment.
You stand in the streaks down your face. You got your heart.
So by this time, it was pretty apparent that you had something going on. Listen, you could put out an album, have one album go really big, and like, wow, a lot of people have exactly one album. When was it pretty clear that you were going to have two, and maybe three, and maybe four, and maybe five? When you look around, you go, wow, this is working out. I you know, this is going to be a career.
Oh, boy. It was amazing. I mean, seemed like at the time, everything we were coming out with, you know, was really, you know, going well. We built a real fan base and our live shows were good. You know, we tried to make the songs live sound like they did on a record. You know, I really cared about what things sounded like, and I really cared that, you know, the musicians played what was on the record so that people felt like they really heard that single, you know, that they paid money to come, you know, come and see. They wanted to hear it, you know, and they want to hear it right. So that was a big thing. But, you know, having a huge company like CBS Records, you know, I was on the Epic side of, you know, it was Epic and Columbia that CBS controlled. And, you know, the Epic label, you know, they just, man, I mean, it was like they were on me, you know. I mean, they were doing everything they could to make sure that they were selling records, you know, getting my investment back. You know, they are a bank, you know. I mean, you know, people think, oh man, they lend you all this money, you know, and yeah, they put the money up front, but you're paying it back.
Wow. So were you one of those acts? And every time I watch, read a lot of music biographies and a lot of documentaries, and I'm kind of shocked by the frequency of artists who can get pretty famous pretty quickly, stay pretty famous for like the early couple of 2-3 years, filling out arenas, and they still are you know, driving 15-year-old cars and living in a $50,000 house. Did it take a while before you actually saw some money?
Well, I mean, I was doing well on the road, you know, and of course, you know, having two buses and a tractor trailer hauling, you know, sound gear and lighting and stuff like that, you know, that's expensive, and having 20 some people on a payroll, you know, and that's expensive.
Yep.
But, you know, we were able to have a nice home and, you know, and I drove a new, you know, fairly new car. You know, I remember when I first started one of my first trips to Texas, I had this really nice new car, and this manager that I had, you know, he said, you know, we really need to trade your car in and get a van and a trailer. You know, we'll get you another car, you know, you can get another car, you know, later. And I did that on my first trip to Texas when I played Austin City Limits the first time. And people can go back and watch that show. You know, I was without a car for a while, and I was driving the van around town here, you know, and with my head hung in shame. No, it wasn't so bad, you know.
No,
I knew that better days were coming.
It all worked out pretty well. Listen, and the bluegrass roots are obvious. Let's we got to do a little Bill Monroe here I want to say this is off of Don't Cheat in Our Hometown. A couple seconds of Uncle Pen. So Bill Monroe lives in your playing and Flatten. Did you, were you like 7 on stage with Flatten, Lester Flatten, Earl Scruggs?
I was on television with Flatten Scruggs at 7. I was on stage with Bill Monroe when I was 6.
Dude.
Up in Martha, Kentucky. And we just went to see the show. We didn't go to be on the show.
Yeah.
Went to see him. Back in those days, you know, my iPhone didn't work up in Eastern Kentucky. So, you know, I had no idea, you know, how to Google him. But no, I did not know what he even looked like, because we heard him on radio. And, you know, it was a long time before we got television, you know, in our family. And times were hard, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s. And but, you know, we went to see him, and I'd been playing for maybe 6 months, 7 months, something like that. My dad had bought me a mandolin when I was 5. And anyway, we go to see him, and the neighbors around town, you know, I call the neighbors in the hood, started shouting out, you know, let little Ricky Skaggs get up and sing a song. And, you know, Mr. Monroe didn't pay any attention to that, you know, but 2 or 3 of those, I think he wanted to put an end to it so he could really get back to his show. And so he called me up there and pulled me up on stage and asked me what I played. I told him I played the mandolin, and he kind of chuckled a little bit.
You sure
know?
You
so
do.
He tucked his mandolin
yeah.
off and wrapped the strap around the curl of the mandolin so it would fit me. And And I knew two songs, and one of them was a song my mother said, "Don't you sing that pinball song if you get up there."
Yeah.
You know, it was the pinball machine. So I knew Ruby, "Are You Mad at Your Man?" Another great six-year-old song to be sung.
Yeah, of course, no great for the first grade.
What she was mad at, you know, anyway, the band knew it, you know, and that was great. So anyway, that was a big deal.
Well, look what little Ricky has turned into. It's Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder. What a joy to have you, and what a joy it'll be to see him on stage. Listen, in preparation for this, go get you some Waiting for the Sunshine, Highways and Heartaches, Country Boy, Don't Cheat in Our Hometown, that 07 collab with Bruce Hornsby. That's great. You and Bruce still hang out from time to time?
You know, it's been a few years since we've been out, but we sure had fun when we did travel and tour. We made some great music. It was so much fun.
It is it's a bluegrass touch on Mandolin Rain. Just go get everything Ricky ever did, and then go see him. It is May 2nd at Arlington Music Hall in Arlington. Obviously, arlingtonmusichall.net for tickets on that. And then the following night, May 3rd, Greenville, Texas, God's Country in East Texas, Greenville Municipal Auditorium at Showtime at thegma.com. Ricky, good health to you, and thank you for decades of just joy and tapping, and I just appreciate you so much. I hope we can talk to you next time through.
Thanks a lot, Mark. We always appreciate talking with you.
That's Ricky Skaggs, and there he is, May 2nd, Arlington Music Hall, May 3rd in Greenville, 9:50. Love me some Ricky. Little Ricky Skaggs. Let little Ricky play. Yeah, that worked out pretty well. Strap a mandolin on him in front of Bill Monroe.
Well, I got a gal that's
wow. Producer Rhonda K. Moreland, happy 10 years of this gig for Rhonda. Here's to 10 more. I don't know who'll be doing the show in 10 years. Just kidding, it'll be me. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills. It might be me. What if somebody could be president when you're 97? I could do a talk show and I'm 76. Thank you, Nikki, for news excellence, and God bless our country, our troops, our families. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. See what's going on the Wednesday show tomorrow. I think stuff will happen in the news today, and tomorrow morning, let's tee it up and talk about it, shall we? Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Mike Gallagher's next. Have a good one.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.